Good morning. We will call to order the April 5th, 2023 Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting. We always begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, and this morning I'd like to ask the newest elected member of the Local Agency Formation Commission to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to make note that Director Corona was recently elected to the LAFCO board, which I think is a real benefit to the Eastern Municipal Water District with many of the issues with LAFCO coming before, especially with the Marietta annexation issues. So I'd just like to congratulate him. And
I want to say something. I just want to thank everybody who helped. It was, you know, it was a team effort. It wasn't me. And like I said before, there's no I in team. And all the work that our staff did and a lot of traveling that I did. But I just wanted to thank everybody who helped out. And it's always good to win.
I will ask April, is there anybody who has pulled a public speaker card for anything not on the agenda this morning?
Not this morning.
Very well. And I'd like to ask our board secretary to take board attendance and then read the rules for virtual participation.
Absolutely. First, we'll do roll call. President Pauley.
Here.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
Our legal counsel is present as well. I will be going over the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you very much. We are going to go change our agenda up this morning. I know we have a recognition that we would like to do this morning, and I believe they are all here. So, Mr. Mawad, we'll go to item 3 on our agenda this morning, which is the recognition of the Lakes of Hemet for the recycled water retrofit.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. It is my privilege today to recognize Lakes of Hemet. As you are aware, during last month's National Water Reuse Conference, EMWD was recognized with the Award of Excellence for the recycled water retrofit at the Lakes of Hemet. And today with us, and I will introduce Diane Struve and Jesse Trejo from the Lakes of Hemet, and I'm going to go through a little bit of information on the project before I bring them up. But essentially, this is the largest retrofit site that we've ever completed. And through our effort, not only with the accelerated retrofit program, but with the landscape transformation, it was just an incredible example of what a private-public partnership can accomplish to benefit the entire community. The Lakes of Hemet, before the retrofit, utilized more than 250 acre-feet of potable water. Today, they're going to be using 80 acre-feet. That's a huge efficiency gain. In addition to the 80 acre-feet of potable water, they'll be using 110 acre-feet of recycled water. They retrofitted not only the golf course to recycled water, but they removed almost 360,000 square feet of non-functional turf, and they put in drought-tolerant landscaping. They upgraded their irrigation system to be more efficient. They lined their what they call the lakes, which are decorative lakes, but they also serve as the storage for their irrigation system. So it was quite an achievement, and we were just very honored at the Water Reuse Conference to be recognized nationally as a leader in recycled water. And as I mentioned, we wouldn't be able to do this without their support, without their collaboration. And I also want to mention our staff, and specifically John Worth, who's here as well. He's been instrumental in leading our effort on the recycled water program. With that, Diane, if you and Jesse can come up, we do have a recognition for them, but I also want you to see if you want to say a few words.
Welcome and good morning.
All right. I'm not very tall. Gentlemen and ma'am, I will say that it took a long time. We broke it up in chunks, but it far exceeded everyone's expectations. I left there this morning, and my home is on the 9th. A hole, and I saw four of the waterfalls and the gorgeous lakes. And I must tell you that when we first started this, I was afraid it was going to look like West Texas. But it doesn't. It's gorgeous. And if you haven't been there, we would like to, since I see that it looks like everyone up here is eligible to live there. I welcome you to come visit and see if you would like to become one of our residents.
So it's a 25 and up community, is that what you're saying?
We don't have to give up our seats.
No, it's wonderful. In fact, yesterday we entertained our assemblyman from the California Assembly, and he was like, wow. People think it's a trailer park, but it's not. It's a destination for people like you. But thank you very much. It's been great, and come see us.
Very good.
I have to say that we couldn't have done it without Jesse Trejo. He's our park superintendent. I come in, and I kiss babies, and I shake hands, and I make financial decisions. But Jesse is there on the ground with our staff. He interfaces with the contractors, he interfaces with your folks, and all of those agencies. And so he's the real hero here.
Very good. I know we also have a member from the Western Manufactured Housing Communities Association who's been very instrumental in this. And Director Record, if you want to join us. The photo?
Great job.
Take a couple, 1, 2, 3. Get in there. Oh.
Thank you for that. And again, I mean, our goal here at Eastern is to use water effectively, and I think this certainly proves that we are meeting our goals on doing that. So with that, we will go back to item number 2 on our agenda, which is a public hearing. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing regarding a proposed amendment of the rates and method of apportionment of the special tax, the boundaries, and a list of authorized facilities within Improvement Area E of Community Facilities District 2013-63, Belaterra, the Eastern Municipal Water District. I declare this public hearing open and would like to ask for a staff report.
Morning, President Pauley, members of the board. EMWD has received a signed petition by Diamond Valley LLC requesting that the board consider amending this CFD, CFD number 2013-63, Belterra, Improvement Area E. Diamond Valley LLC is the sole landowner of the project, and they own 100% of the taxable property within the boundaries of the improvement area. On February 15th, 2023, the board adopted resolution number 2023-13, declaring its intention to consider these amendments and set today's public hearing. The changes include amending the rate and method of apportionment and the boundaries of Improvement Area E, and amend the list of authorized facilities to include the construction or acquisition of improvements for Valleywide Park and Recreation District. The proposed changes result from the changes in the project and the changes in costs from 2013. The project was initially planned for smaller homes in 2013 when the CFD was formed, but now includes larger homes on larger lots. The overall unit count has decreased from 318 to 232, but still remains in compliance with the district's comprehensive debt policy. The project is located in French Valley, east of Washington Street, west of Rebecca Street, and south of Keller Road. The board has received for review a Community Facilities District report for the CFD, attached as Exhibit A to the staff report, prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
Very good. I'd like to ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on March 28, 2023, in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mello Roos Community Facilities Act of 1982.
If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd like to ask her to provide copies, therefore, to the Board.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Very good. Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in the hearing by phone, I'd ask that any members of the public who would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Please state your name for the record before commenting. I do not believe we have any members of the public on the phone or in the chambers here. So at this time, first I'd like to ask, does the board have any questions on this item?
Nope.
Very good. At this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolution, a resolution amending the rate and method of apportionment of special tax, amending the boundaries, and adding certain authorized facilities with an improvement area D of CFD number 2013-63, Bellaterra, and calling election therein. I would like to ask for a motion and a second on the resolution.
I'll move approval.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. The resolution we have just adopted amends the original rate method of apportionment, amends the boundaries, and adds certain authorized facilities with improvement area D of CFD number 2013-63. And calls for a special election within the improvement area, which is to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for CFD number 2013-63, Bellaterra, Improvement Area E of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of voting of the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution, a resolution certifying the results of the April 5th, 2023 special election with Improvement Area E of CFD number 2013-63 of the Eastern Municipal Water District. This time, I'll look for a motion and a second.
I move
motion
approval.
By Director Slauson. Second by Director Corona. Make it a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. And that closes the public. I'm sorry. We will now return to our regular agenda, and we will go to item number 4, which is executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Thank you again, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. As mentioned earlier, we're very pleased with Dr. Corona's election to the LAFCO Commission. And I just wanted to add that we will be sending out thank you letters for all the special districts that supported Dr. Corona. And on March 30th, when we learned of Dr. Corona's victory to overcome five other candidates, we also learned that Director Castillo Estrada who is vice president of the Coachella Valley Water District, was selected as the LAFCO special district representative for the eastern region of LAFCO. So we will be sending him a congratulatory letter as well. Dr. Corona's first LAFCO commission meeting will be next month in May. So we look forward to hearing all about that. Next item on my report is I'm very pleased to share with the board that EMWD has been selected as a finalist for the Award of Excellence at the upcoming AQUA conference that will be held next month in Monterey. Specifically, we were selected as a finalist for our Help to Others program. As you're aware, this program was established to help struggling customers, and we have distributed over $150,000 in financial bill payment assistance with non-rate revenue funds. And that program is being recognized at AQUA, and hopefully we'll be successful in being selected as the award recipient. So more to come on that. Next item I wanted to share with you, as you're aware, there's dramatically improving water supply conditions throughout the state, both on the State Water Project and the Colorado River. In fact, recently on April 2nd, it was reported that snowpack up in the Northern Sierra is almost 200% of average, and in the Southern Sierra, it's 300% of average. So incredible amount of snowpack along the State Water Project, which provides great relief to not only the Metropolitan Water District, but also L.A., who relies on the L.A. Aqueduct. With the southern snowpack being so high, I think that they're going to be in excellent shape for this year. Similar conditions improving on the Colorado River. They had 150% of normal in terms of precipitation, although Lake Mead and Lake Powell are still at low levels. But what it does, it changes the dynamic of the negotiations that are ongoing on the Colorado River, meaning that everyone now has a little bit more time to come to an agreement for the post-2026 operational guidelines on the Colorado River, whereas previously, given the constraints, everyone was focused more on the immediate term. So the improving conditions are such that Metropolitan has engaged with us and others regarding Article 21, excess supply, and specifically looking at cyclic storage programs. So tomorrow, staff will be attending a meeting. We've also extended that invite to Rancho Water District to join us in that conversation, since they also participated and the cyclic storage program in 2019. So we're looking forward to the opportunity to accept some of that excess water for storage in our groundwater basin. We're also going to inquire on the availability of settlement water for the Saboba recharge operation. So more to come, but this year is shaping up to be a very favorable year for replenishment and groundwater storage. Next item, I wanted to share with you that for the last couple of months, we have been tracking legislation in Arizona that would restrict the land application of biosolids. And specifically, it's a House Bill 2669 by Representative Dunn. And originally, the legislation would have prohibited the application of biosolids near populated areas and also in areas that are adjacent to lands that are used for growing of food for human consumption. The legislation would apply to not only importers of biosolids, such as California, but also to generators of biosolids within the state. We immediately checked in with our contract haulers for biosolids, Tule Ranch and Denali, and they both indicated that the properties where they do land apply the biosolids do not fall within those restrictions, which was a relief for us. But having said that, it is concerning that there appears to be proposed legislation that would restrict our ability to diversify land application in Arizona. Now, late last week, when this bill was heard at committee, there was a significant amendment made to the bill, and now the bill, as currently proposed, would restrict the raw septic waste land application, not biosolids. So hopefully, if the bill is approved with the amendment, it should not impact us. But I think this sends a signal to us and others that we should look at diversifying our biosolids land application. And I'll be talking to staff about looking at what other options, in addition to our current practices, and we'll be evaluating our future when it comes to how do we want to manage biosolids. So more to come on that issue, but it appears that the proposed bill will not impact us directly, But as I mentioned, it does speak to the greater, more regulatory constraints that we may be facing. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to share with you that Brigadier General Durham from the March Air Reserve Base, his office reached out to us and requested a tour and a visit with Eastern. So we will be hosting him on April 10th. We will be touring our desalination complex as well as the sites for the North Paris Groundwater Program, which will have a direct benefit to the March Air Reserve Base. So looking forward to hosting Brigadier General Durham and introducing him to all the initiatives that we're currently undertaking. Finally, I wanted to mention that yesterday I had the opportunity to attend Congressman Ruiz's event at the Hemet Library, where he had the White House Infrastructure Implementation Coordinator, Mr. Mitch Landrieu, in attendance. They shared the infrastructure bill that has been recently funded and approved by Congress, and the various ways that potentially agencies like us and others in the Valley could apply for funding grants. So it was an opportunity to catch up with the congressman, talk about our programs for pure water replenishment, groundwater replenishment, and also an opportunity to talk to Mr. Landrieu about all the infrastructure improvements that EMWD has undertaken. I did want to mention that Congressman Ruiz, specifically in his remarks, gave out a shout-out to EMWD and mentioned EMWD as an example of the good work that's being performed in the Valley when it comes to infrastructure. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions the board may have.
Questions or comments? Director Record?
So, Joe, I think you're right on the biosolids. It's good that we're not just shut off all of a sudden, but I think it's appropriate for us to really consider long-term how we deal with our own waste. I mean, if I was Arizona, I wouldn't want California items like this. So that's good. Thank you.
No, we appreciate that, Dr. Record. And you're right. I mean, we've long enjoyed that flexibility, but we also need to recognize there may be restrictions. So we want to make sure we're diversified. And so along those lines, I know Matt and team, we're about to embark on a master plan to look at specifically biosolids. And if we wanted to produce, for example, Class A biosolids versus Class B, what type of investment would we need to make at our reclamation plants? Are there other areas for land application, whether in Arizona or other places? So we're going to look at all those options, understand the cost implications of those options, and obviously we'll report back to the board.
Great. Good. Director Armstrong.
Yeah, I wanted to congratulate you on the Help to Others program being named a finalist for that award. That's something to be proud of no matter what. But I think this is one of the real benefits of AQUA and their conference are these awards, because whether we win or not, there will be a presentation made at one of the general sessions showing what we did on this. And I think that's really helpful to other agencies that haven't quite figured out how to deal with this issue. So it's a great opportunity to share, you know, a success, even if we get the award or not. It's just that's a success in itself. And I think it's great that, you know, that's a good part of AQUA, you know, those conferences to be able to do that. So congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Dr. Armstrong.
Director Slauson.
Yes, on the Arizona legislation, yes. The way it was written, did they give a reason for banning the application of the biosolids adjacent to food growing?
You know, I would have to look at the specific language, but my impression, Dr. Slauson, is it was about protecting public health, thus the proximity to residential communities and crops that would be grown for human consumption. But I would have to look into whether that was based on science or not. I'll have to look into that.
If they're worried about water running off or something and flowing over,
I would have to find out what they based that on. But you know, again, from our understanding, there is no impact. And again, the two haulers that we're currently contracting with, in fact, there's going to be an item upcoming on today's agenda to modify those contracts with Thule Ranch and Denali. But their properties are not within the area of concern that the legislation would have restricted.
Yeah. Joe, I can volunteer that Jolene and I watched the committee hearing, and it was really a generalized conception of a public health issue. There was no specifics given to it, but there was restrictions based upon population density and proximity to agricultural land. But it was interesting in that most of the committee members mentioned California, and some even knew about Kern County restrictions, Orange County restrictions, so they were pretty well versed in the area, but it had very much had an anti-California sentiment that was expressed by the commission, by the committee.
And the feedback we got from CASA on how the bill came up was really seemed to be related to one specific site that was having issues with liquid waste haulers, which the final version of the bill is currently focusing on. So it seemed to be a bit of an overreaction for a specific issue that they were having at one site. So that's the best information we have so far, really, on how it all got started.
All right. Thank you.
Director Corona.
Yeah, Joe, I had a question on the snowpack deal. Is there a physical a way for LA DWP to supply or trade water with Met, not just on paper, but actually physical water?
Physical
from
water.
From the Eastern Sierra.
I'm not aware of that, Dr. Corona.
There's going to be a huge amount of water.
Yeah.
It's going to end up in the wasted lake there, in Owens Lake, or, you know, some way to get it down here other than just doing a paper trade.
Yeah. No, as you're indicating, you know, the way the Met family realizes the benefit of the LA Aqueduct is simply LA reduces significantly its reliance on metropolitan water supplies. That's been the benefit. But if there is a means to actually deliver wet water from the LA Aqueduct to the State Water Project, I'm not aware. But maybe the Director Record is aware of that.
Well, I think there was an effort in the past that ended up not going anywhere. So I don't know. I don't know what the physical restrictions are or challenges. But what's interesting to me is with all the snow and the 100-year-old plus aqueduct that isn't maintained all that well, I'm feeling like I'm not sure they're going to be able to deliver their own water. I think when that snow starts melting, if we have a really warm spring, that they may have issues just keeping their own supplies coming. So,
yeah, because they had this same kind of situation in 2017. They had more water than they knew what to do with, and it all ended up in Owens Lake.
But I'm intrigued with the question, so I'll look to see if anything ever became of the idea of interconnecting the systems, and I'll research that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Yes, I do, President Polly. Good morning, directors. In your packet, you will find a recent S&P credit rating report. This past month, staff participated in their surveillance review of the district's water and wastewater revenue bonds. The last time we were reviewed by S&P was in April 2021 when we issued our 2021 bonds. In the S&P report dated March 28th, that is at your dais, they affirmed our AA+ rating, but they enhanced it from stable to positive. In their view, the district benefits from its position as an essential water, wastewater treatment, and recycled water provider to a population of more than 880,000, an affordable rate structure supported by a diverse customer base with good wealth and income indicators, well-defined management practices that contribute to stable operations, significant cash on hand, and strong pro forma debt service coverage levels that they view as supportive of the rating. The rating is further supported by management's proven track record in developing recycled water projects and local groundwater resources intended to improve the long-term reliability of its water supply. So noted in the report is that a positive outlook reflects a 1 in 3 likelihood an S&P could raise our rating at a future review, assuming no major changes to our water supply portfolio or costs of operations. In discussion with our analyst, it sounds like S&P is a little hesitant of providing AAA ratings currently to Met agencies, mainly due to water supply concerns with Colorado River and State Water Project. Without this concern, the ratings committee all agreed that our agency's performance and metrics are in line with other AAA S&P rated agencies. So we look forward to future reviews. And I'd just like to thank Linnea and John and Thomas, who supported the call, us on the call. We will provide, we provided a very positive view of our accomplishments and a path forward for EMWD, supported by our strong financial results. So good news from S&P. It's been one that we've been really trying to get that AAA rating, and we're inching our way there. With that, I guess I'll take any other questions you might have.
No, that is so excellent. Thank you for that. No other questions. Nick, anything for us this morning? All right.
Good morning. No. Nothing from me this morning.
Matt?
Good morning. Just to let you know, we're still discharging recycled water, but we've begun slowing down this week. By Friday, we should have cut things down in half, with the hopes that by next week, perhaps demands will increase, and we can get closer to ceasing discharge. Other than that, we're at 1,973 acre feet recharged at Grant Avenue. But this season has been different. We suspect it's the fires. The flow coming down the river has been heavy in silt and debris all season long. It never cleared up, and so the recharge rate's gotten pretty low. The basin seemed to be pretty plugged with silt. So we're going to continue to get everything we can, but we're at 1973 so far for the year.
Very good. Any questions for Matt? All right, thank you for that. We will move on to item 5 on our agenda, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board have a conflict or wish more information on an item before we vote? Seeing none, I will look for a motion and a second on the consent calendar.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong.
I'll second.
Seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We'll go on to item 6 on our agenda, which is our action calendar. Item A is to approve and authorize award a contract with AECOM Technical Services Incorporated for $2.2 million for the Regional Water Reclamation Facility Aeration Basin Rehabilitation and Diffuser Replacement Project, preliminary and final design, and appropriation of $2.4 million. Good morning, Mr. Chen.
Yes, good morning, President Pauly, and also a member of the board. Glad to be here. My name is William Chen. I'm here to present to you RWIF Aeration Basin Rehab and also Diffuser Replacement Project. Just a little bit of background. You can see on the map on the right, we have these three plants circled in red. The selected aeration basins within these three plants will be the subject of our project here. Please note that Moreno Valley Treatment Plant, currently their aeration basin is under a different project. So that's why it's we're only covering three plants here. The objective for this particular project is to replace the existing panel diffusers, which we know they are, well, first of all, they're proprietary. Secondarily, because they're obsolete and they're not being supported by the manufacturers anymore. So the recent planning study determined that they had to be replaced, and we need to do so quickly, and so they can be put into operation by 2026. So from the planning study, the key takeaway is that these replacement parts will be depleted very quickly here, and the scope of work is, like I mentioned, the three plants that are shown on the previous slide. The planning study also selected OTT tubular diffusers because they provide the optimal technology, uniformity, and they're suitable for all the treatment plants. Because they are different style, such that we need to look at the airflow projections, really look into it and how to figure out the layout for each plant. Additionally, facility modification will be required because they are different when we're switching to a different style. And with that, we also had to do condition assessment to ensure that existing facilities will be able to support it. By way of project overview, you can see on the right the picture of the existing diffusers. These are flat panels on the bottom of the aeration basins. They will be switched out to tubular diffusers as shown below. And so the consultants will need to evaluate the basin conditions, provide the rehab and repair recommendations. Like I mentioned, we need to go through the whole modeling process to determine the operation and determine the layout of how diffuser will be installed. And of course, the consultant will need to provide the prelim final design, sequencing for construction, cost, and schedule. That being said, we circulated request for proposal to six firms December of last year, and we received two proposals. And the selection panel composed of engineering operations evaluated the proposal based on the criteria as shown below. So from the evaluations, the panel, selection panel felt that AECOM provided an excellent and thorough proposal. It also included additional technical oversights, labor hours, and also expedited 12-month schedule. And I forgot to mention, though, I do apologize for that. For support of this particular project, I have AECOM with us this morning. He's on to my left. He's the principal in charge from AECOM.
Thank you very much for being here, sir. Appreciate it very much. Okay.
Yes, I really appreciate that. My bad for not introducing him earlier. Okay, let's move on. AECOM's work scope involves project management, QAQC, and presentations and workshops. AECOM will evaluate the basins, provide the repair and rehab recommendations, as well as take care of the prelim and final design, cost estimate, constructability review, and the rest of the package that we can take it to advertisement. And finally, they'll provide the services during bidding. So should the board approve this particular project, we're looking forward to get a notice proceed this month, and such that we can wrap up the prelim and final design April of next year. It's a 12-month design schedule, expedited design schedule, and looking to advertise the month after that, which is May. So the recommendation of this morning is approve and authorize the following: execution of contract with AECOM in the amount of $2.2 million, admin award of contracts, and then institute contract, I should say, and then finally the appropriation of $2.5 million to fund the project cost. With that said, I'd like to I can take questions.
All right, any questions on this item?
Nope.
None. Again, I'd like to thank our guest for being here this morning. I'll look for a motion in a second. Motion by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you.
Great,
Great presentation. Thank you so much. We'll go on to item B, which is to approve and authorize the contracts for ACCO Engineered Systems for $1.8 million, P2S Incorporated for $187,000, and Climatech LLC for $121,000 for the Operation Maintenance Center and Administrative Center Building Central Plant Equipment Upgrade for a total appropriation of $3 million. Mr. Brown, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Dave Brown, Director of Maintenance, and before I get started, I want to introduce our guest today. From ACCO Engineered Systems, we have Connor McDonough.
Thank you so much for being here, sir.
And then from P2S Incorporated, we have Marco Cabibo.
Thank you.
And Bryant Mercado.
Thank you very much for being here.
So this project is to upgrade our central plant. So our central plant here at the headquarters consists of three chillers and associated equipment to keep the building cool. The building was constructed in two phases, the first being in 94 with the OMC side, and this side, the AC side, was constructed in 97, and it houses approximately 460 staff. So in 2018, staff hired P2S Engineering to perform an HVAC assessment here at the headquarters and give us recommendations going forward. P2S, the main part of the report was the recommendation for the replacement of all three of our chillers and the associated equipment due to their age and their condition. So that took place in 2018, and the chart you see there is from that report on that date. In 2019, staff retained P2S to help with the design for the replacement of the equipment, And so they developed the specifications and the plans for that. And that includes a detailed implementation plan that will help us stage everything so that we're able to provide cooling services for the facility during the project. So once we had all the plans and designs complete, we went out to bid. And in February of this year, we received two bids for the project, and the lowest responsible bid was from ACCO Engineered Systems. And they came in just over the engineered estimate. ACCO is a reputable firm. They've done business for us before at Hemet Filtration as a subcontractor, and we were very happy with their work. So with this project, it's expected to last approximately 2 years. So for continued support on the project, staff reached out to P2S Engineering for proposals for construction support, and that includes construction administration and also commissioning services. We want to make sure that what's being installed is meeting what's expected, and they have the expertise to be able to do that. Staff also requested a proposal from Climatech. So the district's headquarters is run on Allerton software, and Climatech is the local rep for the Allerton dealer. They are the Allerton dealer in our area. So Climatech will handle all the integration from the new system into our existing control system. So our project schedule, if approved today, notice of acceptance will go out on April 6th. We expect a contract start on the 17th. And then assuming that the lead times on the chillers remain around 12 months, which is where they're at right now, we should be complete within 2 years, so around April of 2025. So we're asking the board today to approve and authorize a contract with ACCO Engineered System for the construction of the OMC AC building central plant equipment upgrade in the amount of approximately $1.87 million. A contract with P2S Incorporated for construction support and commissioning services in the amount of approximately $187,000, bringing the total contract amount to approximately $431,000. A contract with Climatech LLC for integration services in the amount of approximately $122,000, and then a total appropriation for the projects of $3,024,450. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on this item?
No.
Just out of curiosity, with the, we haven't done this in what, several years, but is there an upgrade on efficiencies and things like that, or the equipment getting better, electrical and efficiency power-wise?
Where we gain efficiencies is our ability to troubleshoot and to stage. So the new air-cooled system will allow us to stage better. Mm-hmm. And then also to troubleshoot better. So right now, if we lose a section of the chiller, we take the entire chiller down. This will allow us to take down individual sections and allow us to troubleshoot and keep things in operation. It'll make things much easier for operations and maintenance and make us more efficient because we can have finer tuning our staging.
Very good. I would say this is for the folks that work in this building an important item. So with that, I'll look for a motion in a second. Director Record will make the motion on it. Director Armstrong will second it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Thank you to our guests for being here on this item. We'll move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize award a contract with J.R. Philnet Construction Company, Incorporated, for $2 million for the construction of the Paris Water Filtration Plant Raw Water Pump Station Modification Projects and an additional appropriation of $2.2 million. Good morning, Mr. Gomez, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Good morning, President Pauly and all board members. Mm-hmm. My name is Gustavo Gomez, and I'm happy to present the award of construction for the Paris Water Filtration Plant Raw Water Pump Station Modifications Project this morning. To start off with some background, our Paris Water Filtration Plant has four pump can units that are near the end of their useful life. These pump can units are located at the raw water pump station, and they are experiencing heavy corrosion on both internal and external surfaces. And to maintain reliability at our filtration plant, we need to replace these pump can units. This aerial image on the slide shows the approximate location of the pump cans. Each pump can unit is represented by a red dot in the top right of the image. The design work to replace these pump can units has been completed. The new and replacement installations are recommended to be made from stainless steel material to increase their resistance to corrosion, and also to meet current seismic standards, we recommend replacing the pump can support units. Our staff reached out to our 7 on-call mechanical contractors for construction bids and received a total of 4 bids from those contractors. The lowest responsive and responsible bidder was J.R. Falong, with a bid approximating $2 million. Also, staff previously competitively selected Krieger and Stewart for the engineering services of this project. To maintain continuity with the project, staff negotiated a fee of approximately $85,000 with Krieger and Stewart for engineering services during construction. If board approves today, we would begin procurement of all materials as soon as possible and construction preparation, but not start construction until October of this year and finish it by December of this year. With that, the recommendation today is to advance a contract with J.R. Falong for the construction of this project, advance a contract with Krieger and Stewart for engineering services during construction, advance administrative word of all ancillary contracts that may be necessary to complete this work, and the additional appropriation of $2.3 million to fund project costs. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Gustavo, do we have any guests on this item?
I received a confirmation that someone would join us, but I didn't have the opportunity to meet.
Very good.
Right.
Thank you very much for being here today, sir. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for being here.
Do any questions on this item?
I have a question.
Dr. Corona.
What exactly do the pump cans do?
They are in the raw water pump station, which takes the influent water into the plant. And then from that point, we have a set of pumps that feed that water into the treatment process. The pump cans are attached to the end of the pumps, and they are the pieces that convey that pressurized water into the treatment system.
So it is pressurized then?
It's pressurized.
Okay. Thank you.
And to your point, Dr. Corona, in lieu of open wet well, it's the pump can that houses the actual equipment. So there's no open wet well. It's a pump can.
Okay. Thank you. I'll move that
item. Motion by, unless there's any other questions. No. Motion by Director Corona. Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Polly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Excellent presentation. Thank you so much. With that, we will go on to Item D, which is to approve and authorize funds for $1.1 million for Delaney Water Solutions Limited Liability Company in the amount of $950,000 for the Tool Ranch and Megan Farms for biosolids management services. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. As you heard earlier from Joe, there's been a lot of movement in the biosolids market. This item is separate and is related to our existing agreements and approval of additional funds. So by way of background, in November of 2018, the district entered into 2 5-year agreements with Denali Water Solutions of Riverside, California, and Tule Ranch McGann Farms of Fresno, California, for biosolids management services. The initial estimated amount of both contracts totaled $11,355,000 over the full 5-year term. So biosolids management services are provided at each of the district's 4 treatment plants, with more than 55,000 wet tons of material removed each year. Biosolids are then transported daily to Yuma County, Arizona, and incorporated into farmland for agricultural use. Contract expenditures have been greater than initially estimated for several reasons. The first is the additional biosolids produced at each of the district's treatment facilities is above the original forecasted amounts. There's been an increase in diesel fuel rates over the last couple of years, if we've all experienced. And Denali Water Solutions has increased their price over the term, most recently since September of last year. A summary of the contract increases totaling just over $1.1 million in the first 4 years is reflected in the table at the bottom of page one, top of page two. Last November, Denali requested a significant price increase at the district's San Jacinto Valley and Moreno Valley treatment plants, indicating driver pay and significant inflation to support their request. So purchasing staff and water reclamation staff negotiated with Denali, and we agreed to a lower rate retroactive to September 1st, 2022, with pricing remaining firm fixed through the contract expiration of October 31st of this year. Tule Ranch has not requested a price increase during the first 5 years of the agreement. In evaluating the proposed increase from Denali and biosolids expenditures, purchasing staff contacted several local agencies, including Coachella Valley Water District, Western Municipal Water District, and the cities of Corona, Oceanside, and Riverside, and confirmed that each of the agencies has also received increases in their cost of biosolids management services, with such factors as hauling, logistics, and contract term relating to the differences. Three of the five agencies paid a slightly higher rate than per wet ton than EMWD, with Coachella Valley Water District and the City of Oceanside receiving a lower but comparable rate. The district's existing contracts with Denali and Tule Ranch expire on October 31st of this year. A new solicitation is expected to go out in June with recommendations to the board, hopefully in September of this year. So at this time, our recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize the addition of contract funds in the amount of $1,125,000 with Denali Water Solutions and $950,000 with Tule Ranch McGann Farms for biosolids management services for a combined not-to-exceed total of $13,430,000. With that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you might have at this time.
Any questions on this item? Director Corona?
How many tons of sludge do we produce in a year?
I think it's in the neighborhood of 55,000.
What tons is that? 55,000 tons?
Sounds right, yeah.
Okay. That's my only question.
There's trucks daily at our treatment plant. Some of the treatment plants, it can be 2 to 3 trucks per day.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking of Director Recker's comment about looking for a future solution to taking care of this problem locally without having to ship it. That's a lot of sludge.
It is a significant amount. You're absolutely right, Dr. Corona, but I guess a couple things. As I mentioned earlier, I think over the last several years, we've enjoyed this option that's been cost-effective, especially for our ratepayers. But to your point, costs are escalating. And I think with escalating cost, with potentially more regulatory constraints, I think it's necessary for us to look at what it would take to look at other options. And in the past, this agency has looked at pasteurization. We've looked at pelletizing the biosolids. I think we need to revisit those options and understand the economics of those options. But regardless, we need to diversify our options because we cannot be entirely reliant on land application in Arizona. I think we need to look at other options as well. So it's both the cost drivers as well as the regulatory constraints that's really prompting us to look at our options. I'm sorry, Matt, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that with the state's recent efforts to divert organics from landfills through CalRecycle, you can actually get assistance from CalRecycle in getting permits for farms in local areas if you're seeing roadblocks from local jurisdictions and things. So yeah, as we go out with this RFP for new services, we are hoping we could find a way to find local sources to recycle biosolids. And the master plan we brought up earlier, we'll be looking at the whole comprehensive picture from the digesters themselves to the dewatering machines and the ultimate biosolids that we produce and where we'll recycle it.
Go ahead, Director Record.
What's the moisture content of the biosolids? Is it pretty dry?
I mean, we get about 21% when we're able to run the centrifuges, okay, which is relatively low compared to more modern centrifuges. Ours are over 15 years old now. So a brand new centrifuge might be able to achieve something like 24, you know, another reason to do the master plan. But since the centrifuges are older, at a couple of the plants, we've had some breakdowns and had to rely on our belt presses, where we get 16% to 18% when we have to utilize that equipment.
Okay. So we've been through this before. I know, Steve, you probably remember that. Yep. 20, 25 years ago, somebody was paying farmers to apply sludge, and it was, I mean, there was a lot of hysteria going on, people getting sick and all kinds of things. So it's not,
allegedly,
you know, it's not without, allegedly, challenges, that's for sure. But I think, you know, a long-term goal would be to try to deal with it within our area, since we are creating the waste.
Yeah, I remember when Eastern was doing the pasteurization thing, and there was talk of drying and pelletizing, and I think the pasteurization process would make it Class A, and then, you know, you could use it. But I think we need to look at that again, because I think there are opportunities, if we were to dry and pelletize it, that we could find some, you know, local places to put it. You know, it probably costs some money initially, but at least we won't have to haul it to Arizona or something like that. But I think it's just something we need to look at.
It seems to me this is more than an Eastern issue. This is a regional issue on that. And as Director Corona indicated, if we were going to move in that direction and make capital investments in this, I would kind of at least like to explore making Eastern kind of the leader in the area and maybe being able to have some customers if we put the initial investment in, that we could do this regionally. So just something to think about.
No, that's a good suggestion, President Paul. In fact, my recollection is over a decade ago when we were looking at sludge dryers, you know, we were looking at specifically the Andrus dryers and pelletizing. To your point, President Paul, we actually looked at the economics of what it would be if it was more of a regional facility, mm-hmm, meaning if we had neighboring agencies wanting to haul their biosolids so we can dry the biosolids. So we looked at economy of scale. Mm-hmm. And there are other such examples. IUA has a composting facility. I think you're all familiar with it. It's a former IKEA warehouse. They also have regional participation. So when it comes to these types of investments, sometimes it does make sense to gain the economy of scale by regionalizing it. So as we embark on this master plan to look at what it would take in terms of investment to produce a Class A biosolids, we will definitely look at that option.
Okay, because I again think it could be something where, again, as Laura mentioned, we have the credit rating, we have the expertise. I would always like to have Eastern as kind of the regional leader in these things.
You know, what's also going on is, you know, Synagro has partnered up with some folks, and they're doing Class A mixing biosolids and yard waste, although I don't know that that's working out really great right now, because they do have this problem up in the desert with the smell and all that. But there, with the mixing of the yard waste and the biosolids, there's so much product out there that it's difficult for them to get rid of it all. So I think if you get the yard waste out of it, maybe it might be easier to get rid of, because that non-Class A yard waste is a nightmare, and we've seen guys spreading that around. It's got everything. It's got weed seeds, tree seeds, everything. And I've seen guys take it thinking this is going to be great, and it's a disaster. It's all full of plastics and all. It's a mess. But I think we need to stay away from that and just stick with the, you know, the drying of the sludge.
Director Record.
Well, you mentioned yard waste, and there's also food waste now that has to be composted, and I don't know if there's any, you know, connection there or opportunities, but an issue like this, to me, is that's what Eastern has done over the years. We're leaders in progressive thinking, and also I don't think anybody has a better track record on obtaining grant funding than we do. So I think it's a challenge that this district's up to.
It's a challenge, but there's, you know, every challenge, there's an opportunity. I think it's a great opportunity for us. And as you and our legal counsel indicated, I'm guessing at some point Arizona is going to say no. And so we need to prepare for that. So I would love to see Eastern maybe put our thinking caps on and how we could be a regional leader in this.
We appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
So, all right. We need probably a motion and a second on this. Motion by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Thank you. Excellent presentation on that. We will go on to item 7 on our agenda, with informational items and presentations. I'm going to do collections process update.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me, President Pauly, and members of the board. It's my pleasure to give you this informational presentation. So, by way of background, you may recall the executive order restricting water shutoffs for non-payments that expired on December 31st of 2021. So in accordance with Senate Bill 998, the delinquency process, which includes the door hanger delivery, resumed on March 14th of 2022, and EMWD resumed non-payment disconnect procedures with our first account disconnections on March 21st of 2022. And as a reminder, EMWD did not process any non-payment shutoffs during the entirety of the executive order. So the pandemic was an unprecedented time for EMWD, caused a sharp increase in past due customer bills due to our inability to shut service off for non-payment, as well as many customers were affected financially by the pandemic. So staff pivoted and started focusing on customers, assisting customers that were struggling to pay by offering longer-term payment plans. And we also educated customers on the various payment assistance programs that were available to them. Such as Help to Others, which you remember that initially would apply a $100 credit to customer accounts, and the board did increase that to $200, providing a significant level of assistance to our customers. Additionally, we had the California Water and Wastewater Arrearage Payment Program and the Low-Income Household Water Assistance Program that did provide assistance during that moratorium. And lastly, the moratorium did cause a significant increase in account aging. As you can see on that slide, we ended 2019 at an average account aging of about 3.5%. That was our normal at the time. But by the beginning of 2022, we saw our aging climb to nearly 40%. And so through a combination of both payment assistance for our customers as well as resuming the delinquency process, account aging was reduced by 24% or approximately $7 million. And right now, we are actually seeing that our account aging is plateauing at about 15 to 16% over the last 3 months. And so that is causing us to look to provide additional collections methodologies to drive down our aging. So when reviewing ways to improve our collection strategy, we did review the California Water Code and EMWD's administrative code. And the California Water Code Section 72100 says, and I'm paraphrasing, unpaid and delinquent charges accrued at a property can be added to property tax for the property in which they were left. And EMWD's admin code, Section 5.703, says regarding delinquent tenant balances that in the event a tenant balance remains unpaid, the property owner shall become responsible for that unpaid balance. So, given this information, staff developed additional recommendations for collections processes. So before we get into our future plans, I wanted to review our current collections process. So on the right, you can see our current delinquency timeline, which covers a bill from day one when it's created all the way to day 88 when an account is closed for non-payment, and that occurs 5 days after the account is disconnected for non-payment. So after an account is closed for non-payment, the district does utilize the following collections methods. So we have secondary collections for closed tenant accounts, we have property liens for closed owner accounts, and we also have property tax to recover unpaid balances on closed owner accounts. And Director Armstrong, during the admin committee meeting, you did ask about utilizing property liens for tenant balances. So based on that recommendation, we are researching that option right now. And so we did extensive research with our sister agencies to, you know, our regional agencies near us to understand their collection strategies and methods. And what we found was that Rancho, Elsinore, Western, and the City of Hemet all currently utilize the Franchise Tax Board as a collection methodology. So we felt like we were in good company as we looked to add that to EMWD's current collection strategy. So our recommended actions based on our findings is for closed tenant accounts, we would pursue the Franchise Tax Board on all closed tenant balances if a full Social Security number is available. And full Social Security is required to submit an account to the Franchise Tax Board. We would also concurrently continue to pursue debt with secondary collections. And if the balance is greater than 500, we would pursue collection activity for 6 to 18 months. And if unsuccessful at that time, we would submit to Riverside County property tax roll. And so to put this in perspective, we gathered some data at the end of 2022, and we found that slightly over 400 accounts met this criteria. And we would assume that after pursuing the collections channels for secondary collections in the Franchise Tax Board, that number would be reduced. And then for closed owner accounts, staff recommends the following action. Pursue Franchise Tax Board for all closed owner balances less than 500 if a full Social Security number is available. Concurrently, continue to pursue debt via the filing of a property lien. And then pursue Riverside County property tax roll submission if the balance is greater than 500, as we currently do. So I talked earlier about a collection process of 6 to 18 months. This timeline is a representation of that for tenant balances before we would submit to the Riverside property tax rolls. So at the longest range of this scenario, you see the 18-month example. In this example, the tenant balance is left in January of 2023, and it would not be submitted for property tax collection until the following year in 2024. And then conversely, the lowest end of this timeline would be 6 months. And in this example, a tenant balance is left in December of 2023 and would be submitted the following property tax process in July. And so the easiest way to remember this is if the tenant debt is left in year one, it would not be submitted until year two. So I wanted to provide some information on the Franchise Tax Board if anybody is unfamiliar with this process. It is an annual submission process where eligible accounts are submitted in December. New accounts can be submitted intra-year throughout this process prior to the next annual submission. There is a 30-day notice to customers that is required by the Franchise Tax Board to inform them that if they take no action to pay their debt, that their debt will be submitted in 30 days to the Franchise Tax Board. EMWD is notified of any payment that is made by the Franchise Tax Board with their intercept program if a payment is captured. And if a payment is captured through an alternate method other than the Franchise Tax Board, such as secondary collections, or if an account holder pays the district directly, that account would be removed from the Franchise Tax Board collection effort. So understanding the impact this change is going to have to property owners, we know that effective communication is key to ensure our property owner population is well informed before this process starts. So I just want to let you know that the new property tax process of submitting tenant balances will not begin until the property tax process of 2024. So we have some time to provide ample communication to our property owner population. So all owners will be periodically communicated with and informed of this change in 2023 to ensure they are fully informed before the process begins. Additionally, we have ongoing communication with the property owner where if a tenant moves into the property that they own, they will be advised that we have had a move-in accepted by EMWD, and at that time they'll be informed of our property tax process. Similarly, when an account closes, the property owner will be notified that the tenant account has closed, and when the final bill produces, that letter to the owner will go out, advising them of the closing balance at the property, and also, again, reminded about the collections process via the property tax. So to be clear, the letter will advise property owners that the district will attempt to make every effort to collect from the person that left the debt. And we will do this for a minimum of 6 months and a maximum of 18 months. We want all the property owners to understand that we're going to do everything that is, you know, in our power to collect from the tenant first. But if we are unsuccessful, the tenant debt will be added to the Riverside County property tax roll. And so right now we have draft letters that are ready for PGA's review, and that will be finalized with PGA at the conclusion of this meeting. So to summarize, the recommended process for tenant accounts will be: pursue the Franchise Tax Board for closed tenant-based debt for a minimum of 6 months and a maximum of 18 months, and if not successful, place on Riverside County property tax roll if the debt exceeds 500. And the recommended process for owner accounts will be: pursue Franchise Tax Board for all closed owner balances less than 500, and continue to pursue owner-based debt with a balance of 500 or greater via the Riverside County property tax process. And with that, I am happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Chrissy, I just wanted to clarify the communication for tenant accounts with the property owner will be on a regular basis, as you indicated, once the account is established, but also when an account is closed and a tenant is moving out, it will be timely communication such that if the property owner has a deposit, they can withhold the deposit, and we want to make certain that communication about any delinquent balance is communicated to the property owner in a timely fashion, so that way they're aware of the status before they release any deposit for the tenant.
Correct.
Director Slauson.
Yeah, I like that the landlord is notified. Are they notified at the beginning that they could be, when the account is first opened?
Yes.
They could be liable. Okay.
Yes.
And then I would say, yeah, I'm glad we're pursuing this, you know, as far as we are, because it's really whatever isn't paid by the people who don't pay gets paid by the people who do pay.
Right.
And that's not really fair to them. So that's I think this point. Is a good program. I appreciate the work.
Director Armstrong.
So our aging is like now 15% or something like that over 60 days. How much of that becomes a bad debt? Do you know what percentage is uncollectible at the end of the day? Or
I would have to do some research.
I want to say, and John can correct me if I'm wrong, but we have had a history of writing off a certain percentage, correct?
Yeah.
What is, was it based on a percentage?
No, it's, I mean, it's closed accounts. So when you say percentage, you go back to prior, during the pandemic, there was very little write-offs at all. But as we talked about, you know, since the reestablishment stuff, the write-offs this year.
I'm speaking of the allowance, when we do the allowance at the end.
The allowance, from a financial reporting side, that number, it's a, the way we calculate it is over 90 days, and it's rough.
I want to say it's like 50%. I mean, I didn't want to say that, but I think it's about 50%.
We'll look into that, and we'll get back with the specifics, Director Armstrong.
Well, I just was asking because, I mean, I know some of this gets collected, and all of these tools help do that, and the more tools you have, the better, you know.
But when I got here, it was abnormally low, like 3%. I mean, it was really, really low. So for us to see 15% now seems high, but I think the circumstances with the pandemic and trying to collect just made it very difficult. So now we're trying every method we can to try and collect on those accounts.
And I think that there's changes in how long you have to wait.
Yeah,
before
it's SB 998 changed our world
a lot
too. Yes.
Yeah, but I support the additional measures. I just think we need to do as much as we can, as quickly as we can, you know, to protect ourselves and try, our best chance to collect is the sooner you do it. So,
But I believe the notification to the property owner is critical so that they can be aware and collect any deposit.
Yeah.
Now, I'd just like to say, you know, there is value to having reliable, clean water show up at your, and we, it's, as Director Slauson indicated, it is only fair for the people that pay their bills that we try and collect from those that don't, because they are getting the services. So great work. Appreciate it very much. I think the district is a great benefit to have someone like you that pursues all these avenues. So thank you for a great presentation, great work, and thank you. All right, we will go to item B, which is our fiscal year 2022-2023 second quarter enterprise performance measures. Nicole.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm pleased to present the fiscal year 2023 second quarter enterprise performance measures to you today. So what you're looking at is our balanced scorecard. This is an overview of the results for the second quarter. As we'll discuss, there are three measures that made it to the watch list this month or this quarter. And what that means is that a measure is placed on the watch list when at least two months are outside of the goal range. And so we'll talk about that in more detail as I get into the presentation. We did go over this in great detail during the committee meeting. So I will provide a high level summary in the interest of time. So our first measure is the water operating cost per acre foot delivered. And this is one of our measures that made it to the watch list. As you can see in the yellow, we are above our average cost per acre foot for all 3 months in the second quarter. And this is due to lower than budgeted water deliveries. So as you can see, the blue line is our goal line for cost per acre foot. And during cooler months, when we have fewer water deliveries, we see that this number, this cost per acre foot, will tend to go up. And we'll look at that in more detail in the graph. So in the green on this line chart, we've got the operating costs for each month for water service. And then in blue, we've got the acre feet delivered each month. As you can see, these numbers tend to trend together and the lines kind of parallel each other. You'll see that December, there's a variation from this. And this is just due to the timing of some expenses in December. And when we drill into those costs a bit more, for December, you'll see that those costs, we have higher allocated support costs, which is the lighter blue shading at the top. You'll see an increased amount in December. And we'll see an impact. This will affect our G&A costs, and a little later in the presentation, we'll talk about that. So our next measure is the wastewater treatment operating cost per million gallons treated. The Q2 results are below goal and favorable. The next measure is the recycled water storage. Our goal is to utilize or to maintain between 75 and 100% of our forecasted storage for each period. And for the second quarter, we're within that target range. And when we talk about storage, we also want to look at recycled water usage for the time period. So for the second quarter, you can see we're slightly below our two-year average. The two-year average line is shown in blue. And this is just due to weather and the rain that we've had, cooler temperatures, and we definitely expect to see the impact in the third quarter. And, you know, as you've heard, we've had to discharge, as Matt Melendrez mentioned. Our next measure is the self-generated power. And this is our solar facilities and microturbines, and they continue to outperform our anticipated production this quarter. And that's attributed to the newer facilities. We expect them to exceed those performance goals. And the next measure is our customer hours out of service. These are our outage hours, and this is another measure that is placed on the watch list for the second quarter. Our November and December outage hours are above target, and this is attributed to pressure zone upgrades. It's pressure zone 1764, Director Slauson in Moreno Valley. In summary, 84% of these outage hours were planned outages for upgrades and planned work, and the remaining 16% were unplanned. This chart shows a breakdown of the unplanned and planned hours. So the planned hours are on top, the striped area. So you can, you know, as I mentioned, the planned outages were the bulk of the outage hours this quarter. And that was work continued from the first quarter. I believe we discussed that at the last presentation. Our next measure is the wastewater treatment system reliability. So our system uptime for the second quarter, results are favorable, and we continue to see high uptime at all four facilities. The next measure is our wastewater spills of collection and treatment systems. Our goal for each month is to have less than three spills. Ideally, we'd have none. Like in November and December, there were zero spills, we're happy to say. So we are within goal. Our customer satisfaction score is the next measure. And in the second quarter, we are within goal. I would like to mention that this score is made up of two components. It is our after-call surveys, as well as our last experience surveys from Maximo. And during the second quarter, we did have an issue with the data collection for the Maximo surveys. So these results are only for the after-call surveys, but the after-call surveys are the bulk of the survey data, so we're confident that this is a good, you know, a good measure for our customer service score. The next measure is the injury and illness rate, and we are still below goal and favorable, ending the quarter at 1.9%. We are still very low compared to the industry average, which is currently 4.9%. Next, we have our G&A costs as a percentage of total operating costs. And this is our other measure that made it to the watch list this month. So we have a couple of factors happening here. We did have some unanticipated expenses during the quarter, such as we had some legal fees. We had some PTO accruals that affected it. But also, the results for the G&A costs are expressed as a running average. So the prior 12-month period percentages factor in to our results. And you may recall that last December we had a high CalPERS contribution, about $4 million, that impacted our G&A quite a bit, and then some SCE back billing issues, higher energy costs as well. So now we're seeing the impact of that because of that rolling average. And this chart just provides a little more detail as to the total costs and the G&A costs in comparison. Next, we have our net operating margin. And as you can see, the trend for the second quarter is favorable. We were a little bit lower in December just due to those unanticipated expenses. And finally, we have our CIP actual to budget. So we ended the second quarter, December, at 85% implementation of our CIP. And that represents $52 million of the forecasted $129 million for the year spent to date. And we should have Q3 results coming very shortly. So in summary, nine of the goals are performing better than goal, and we have three measures that did not meet their respective goals, and that was the water operating cost per acre foot delivered, customer hours out of service, G&A costs. Our next update is scheduled for June. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Nicole?
No questions. Great report.
Thank you.
Thank you for a great report. Why don't we take a short break before moving to our next item?
I was wondering when you're going to take control again.
All right, we are going to reconvene the meeting. We are going to move on to item 7C, which is a review top-level revenue and expenses budget operating fixed assets and capital improvement program. Mr. Adams, the floor is yours.
Thank you, President Pauly. Good morning, members of the board. This morning's presentation on the second is our second informational item on the budget, really providing the board just really a top-level view of the budget, really that 50,000-foot view of our upcoming two-year budget. As the board knows, the budget is really our planning document going forward in the next 2 years, really to help us provide essential services to the community, but also to accomplish the board's strategic priorities. As it has in the past, the strategic plan plays a critical role in both the development of the operating budget, but more importantly, the capital plan. So with that, there we are. So this is the outline of my presentation. I'm going to give a brief summary of the last study session, which was last month. I'm going to talk just at really a high level on preliminary expenditure, provide the overall increases that we're seeing, have a few slides on water purchases, personnel, and other operating expenses, and then go into the operational service summaries, which is the water, wastewater, and recycled water. And then talk a little about our investments that we're going to be making over the next 2 years, both in operating fixed assets and our capital improvement program. And then I have one slide just to update you on our preliminary rates that we presented last cost of service. We had a slight reduction I want to share with the board, which you'll see also coming at the end of this month or at least the second meeting in the month. And then just cover the schedule and the next steps. So for the budget, just quick summary, certainly the last presentation I talked about, you know, operating expenses is roughly 50% of the budget. Of those expenses, almost 75% is in simply personnel and water purchases. So, you know, a large portion in things that we have a little less control of over. And then you really focused on staffing. As you are aware, we have almost 660 full-time equivalent positions. This next year, we're actually recommending a reduction, but that has been really consistent over the last 10 years. I mean, very slight growth when you go back and look at 10 years, even though certainly in our district we've had significant growth as far as customers. Budget uncertainty, the board is more than aware of the high inflation, the volatility that's in the market, and the supply chain impacts that the district has experienced. And then really cost increase. We've highlighted this multiple times, and I'll even highlight it again, energy costs, chemical, and waste hauling have significant increases over the last 2 years. We are anticipating a 5% increase for 2024, and then we are projecting 7% is what Met is projecting for 2025. So you can see the impacts for EMWD for both those years. The CIP, we actually roughly $159 million. There has been some adjustments to that, a little smoothing out, slight reduction down to $150 per year. And then I did present OPEB at zero. With the newest actuarial that we got in the last 2 weeks, we're actually projecting $2.4 million as far as an ADC, and I can talk about that when I get to that slide. And then pension liability, slight decline from prior year. We are 76% funded, which is great. Last year, I think we were 68%, so an increase based on returns back in 2021. And then the other thing, we're going to continue that $15 million for the pension trust contribution. So preliminary expenditure, this is really a high-level summary, so just go quickly through it. Operating expenses overall, 9% on average. Certainly, again, 50% of our expenses are in operating expenses. Overall, $556 million when you combined CIP, debt service, and OFA. Capital improvements, this number, the 128 and the 123, is net of grants. The overall budget is $300 million, but the total that is going to be funded by district is $252, and we anticipate about $48 million in grants over the next 2 years. For debt service, seeing a slight increase from $59 million up to about $61 million over the 2 years. And then for OFA, and I'll go a little more in detail when I get to that slide, we're actually seeing an increase from $25 to $41 million, but there's about $14 million of carryover that we're anticipating this year. And then for the second year, $24 million, which is new purchases. G&A did have a significant increase in year one, mainly because of the inflationary increases that we've seen over the last 2 years. But when you look at the second year, that increase is less than 3%. Highlighted the pension trust fund, the $15 million each year, which is consistent with the past 2 years. And then in the miscellaneous others, there's $1 million increase from this current year, but that is related to additional money for conservation, about $1 million in additional money for conservation. So this is really going over, talked about water purchases are one of our significant costs. I highlighted the increases that we're anticipating to take effect both in 2024 and 2025. You know, that 7% that MED is projecting is based on their 10-year forecast, which was done, you know, almost 18 months ago. Certainly with the increases that we've been seeing, they probably have seen similar increases, so it'll be interesting to see what their projections are when they start their budget process in the coming year. We are anticipating, because of the conditions, the ability to buy replenishment water both in 24 and 25, last 2 years that we have not been able to do that. And then you can just see the increase in year one, that $1.6 million, is from the prior year budget. And the prior year budget anticipated more treated water purchases. With the shift to more untreated, we had savings, and so our projections for this year are less. But the overall budget increase from year to year is only $1.6 million. You can see that 6.6 is based on really the rate increases that we're going to see in 2024. So for personnel, really the slide is very similar to what I presented last month, just focused on the reduction of 7.5 FTEs. That's the net reduction. We do have a few new positions, but mainly there's, I think it was 11 reductions, but a net of 7.5. We are expecting, or at least anticipating, COLA adjustments at 5% in this coming January, and then 3% in 2025. For medical, this is our standard 5% increase year over year, which actually has a fiscal impact of $1.3 million. And then I mentioned pension contribution. The decrease in the UAL is based on sort of investment returns back in 2021. And we do anticipate an increase in the second year because of investment returns in 2022. That increase is 5% or roughly $800,000. And then, again, the $15 million in the trust fund. I did mention OPEB. We just got a recent actuarial with some changes in the asset allocation and just performance. That $2.4 million is what is considered normal cost in the ADC. So right now, last budget cycle, we were at 120% funded. Right now, we're at 102%. So being closer to 100%, you're going to have your normal costs, and that is at $2.4 million. We won't know until we get the actuarial for next year because this is projected. If the market performs better, that number would be significantly less. If it doesn't, the way that it's smoothed out, that number would be a little bit higher, but not significantly higher. So other operating expenses, certainly these are our seven main categories on that other 25% of operating expenses. We, you know, are putting them in order of magnitude, but as far as the annual budget, the three that we've highlighted and continue to talk about is energy, chemicals, and waste hauling or biosolids. You can see those increases, 29% in the first year for energy, 60% for chemicals, and then biosolids, 45%. But you look at the other ones, outside services, materials and supplies, administrative expenses, very consistent or, you know, really close to what we've done in the past, anywhere from 2 to 4%. The one that does stick out is software, and that is just because we've had some new subscriptions, new services. So there's an increase in the first year based on our continued leverage of technology. And then you can see the increase is 3% the second year. So certainly we anticipate increases higher than inflation with energy and chemicals. When you look at the others, getting more back in line with what we've experienced prior to the buildup on inflation. So I'm going to quickly go through the operational summaries for both water, recycled water, and wastewater. Overall, for water operations, you look at the revenues at 8.8% for demand, which is commodity, domestic water, which is commodity, 7.8%, really consistent with what the preliminary rate increases that we shared with the board last month, plus the growth that we've seen. Also in the second year, the same thing with preliminary and growth. The one that really sticks out is agriculture. This is really based on current trending and more importantly, that Lake Hemet has purchased more water from the district. So that trend at 3.2 is close to what we're seeing now. We did have discussions with Lake Hemet recently. I'm not sure, you know, should their projections change, but they continue to suggest that they're going to continue purchasing water from us at the same level. So that increase is really reflective of just additional increases from this, from Lake Hemet Municipal Water District. Going down to operating expenses, you can see purchased water, 2%. And again, that is really, you know, that change is based on just that the current budget is higher than what we project in our current cost based on the shift from treated to untreated. Operations and maintenance, 3.4, but you can see energy at that 32%, and which is consistent across the board. And then you can see in the second year at almost 12%. Allocated support services and G&A, those increases are mainly driven by labor. Certainly the recent cost of living adjustment and other cost increases are driving those increases in the first year. But when you look at the second year, get back to normal, assuming a 3% COLA and some other cost increases.
John, before you leave that slide, can you give me a little more detail on the ag part of it, the 37%?
Yeah, 30%? So that is the Lake Hemet. So, okay. You know, yeah, I think in the last two-year budget, the trending that we saw from them making purchases was less. And as the drought worsened, they bought more water from us. And so that $2.3 million is significantly less than what we're currently seeing. And the increase at that 3.2 is based on the current trending and our discussions with the purchases that they're going to make. Okay. So that's at 37%. It's not an increase in the rate of that much. It's just more purchases by Lake Hemet.
What's the source of that water for Lake Hemet?
I think it's raw water, untreated.
It's imported raw water.
So that's part of the increase in the operating costs under purchase water as well?
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, if you look at the, you know, the total revenue, I mean, it's a small amount of the water that we're actually selling. So it may have a little, I mean, of course, selling a little bit more, we're going to have those increased operating costs, but it's not significant when you look at the one the $130 million versus the $3
million. I didn't know if it was like a one-for-one. You know, if you're going to increase sales, you're going to have an increase.
It is. I mean, from a cost of service side, I mean, if they're just buying less, we're spending less on the purchases. The one aspect is there is just general overhead that's allocated. But, again, it's when you look at the purchases, the additional $1 million, you look at total revenues, it's less than 1%. So,
Mr. Adams, if I can interrupt you for 1 second, I was told we're having a little technical difficulties with our audio. So can we take about a
five-minute
break from your presentation?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay.
At least it wasn't me speaking.
It was not you, no.
Welcome to Zoom. Enter your meeting ID followed by pound. Enter your participant ID followed by pound. Otherwise, please enter the meeting password followed by pound. Welcome to Zoom. Enter your meeting ID followed by pound. Enter your participant ID followed by pound. Otherwise, you have entered the meeting as a panelist. Attendees can now hear you speak. This meeting is being recorded.
Mr. Adams, I'm told we're back live, so.
All right. Thank you, President Pauly.
I had a question.
Yes.
Similar to
Director Eckert.
Randy's question. Are we in contact with Lake Hemet, and do we kind of have an idea what they're looking at for this next year as far as the lake and how much they may or may not use?
Yeah, so we are, and maybe I was going to make a comment.
Yeah, water operations stays in contact with Lake Hemet often. I haven't personally heard their projections for what they're going to need from us for the next year, but I do know the lake is full.
Okay.
The lake filled up, and so we have added water, coming down the river because of it.
Okay. Yeah, and just to add on to what Matt said, I was talking with Donna, who's our finance manager over budget. Her comment was, on average, they've been purchasing roughly 3,500 feet when you look at it over a 10 or 12-year period, but there are years in which they don't make any purchases. And I think when we go back and look at 2018 or 2019, there was little purchases, and then this past year, they've made a lot more purchases. So again, as you know, when the lake is full, they don't need the water, and when it isn't, they're buying a lot of water from us, so. And that's the difficulty of that number, because I think any budget cycle, you'll see it change based on conditions, which when we talk about domestic water, it's pretty consistent because of the huge amount of residential that's part of the domestic water portion. All right. So moving on to wastewater. Overall, revenues are expected to or projected to increase by 7.6%. Certainly, with wastewater service at 9.1%, partially driven by growth and then also the preliminary rates that we're proposing to increase. Outside water, wastewater collections, this is money that agencies collect on our behalf. Although that percentage is 3.4%, the $34.8 million was higher than what we're actually trending and projecting for this year. So it shows only 3.4%, even though that the rates are being increased very similar to the ones that we bill. And then dump stations, one of the items that's coming forward to the board in the next meeting is an increase in our rates for the dump station. So there's a slight increase in that. Plus, there has been increased activity. So partially that 26% increase is both the rate increase, but also just increased demand as far as that service. Moving down, recycled disposal. This is the transfer between wastewater and sewer. There is an increase. Part of that increase is the rate increase. But if you recall from the rate study for recycled water, there was also a percentage increase on how much is being transferred. So in the prior 2-year budget, it was 2.8%. It's been increased to 3% to help fund recycled water. And then just looking overall, when you look at it, certainly you see the increases in the things that we've talked before. Energy at 26%, sludge hauling at 56%. Those are really driving that total operating cost of an increase of 15.3%. In the second year, you see energy and treatment, which is where chemicals is in treatment, and then energy at almost 11.4%. So, again, those are still driving those increases that we are anticipating in the second year at 9%. And then for recycled water, if you recall, the rate study that we did last summer actually proposed that recycled water rates for ag would be 0% for 23-24, and then in 25 would be based on inflation or 3%. It also recommended 3% increases for non-ag. And so when you see that 3.5% recycled water sales, that is anticipating a 0% increase in non-ag for 2024, but a 3% for non-ag. Demand is really that fixed daily service charge that does have an increase similar to the water side, and then the wastewater customer increase at 11% is that transfer coming in from sewer. Looking at operating costs, 10.9% year one, 5% in the second year, again, getting closer to what we have experienced in past years. Really what's driving that increase in the first year is both energy at 11, storage at 32%, and then transmission at 23%. So overall, we're going to have a little less in net operating income for recycled water, but, a couple hundred thousand and builds up in the second year.
The storage increase?
Yeah, so what happens is there's sometimes improvements. It's not... There'll be improvements that are categorized for storage, so repairs or other maintenance projects that are classified within the storage. So not the cost of storage, but just for repairs and maintenance. And I did not look to see which projects was driving that, but I can take a quick look and report back to the board on that. Because when you see that number, you think, how has our cost of storage have increased? But it's really based on maintenance and repairs that are one time or every few years.
Might be an expense that comes along every 4 or 5 years.
Exactly. I was looking at Matt to see if Matt knew.
Like grading of slopes, ripping of certain pond bottoms, things like that will come up every so many years.
Thank you.
It's a good observation. I should have clarified. Sorry about that. So next, jumping into our investments in infrastructure and fixed assets. So just quickly over operating fixed assets. And one of the things I should mention is as we go through these slides, both on OFA and capital, the budget anticipates 100% of the spend. And I think we talked about this at the last cost of service study, that our assumptions in building the rate model did not assume 100% spend in both OFA and capital. If you recall, it was 65% OFA based on our current trending and 95% on capital. But what I will be showing the board is 100% for each of them, and I'll go through that. So for technology, really the the two main drivers for technology investment is both the proposed or the new ERP that we will be evaluating and proposing to the board in the late fall, and then land management system. Both are $3.5 million per year over the 2 years, a total of $14 million. And then looking at maintenance projects, Dave Brown was up here earlier talking about the OMC chiller replacement and the cost in that, and that's the funding for the next 2 years, $2.9 million, as that project will be over the next 2 years. And then the other large one for maintenance is the biofilter. You can see that $2.5 million. Looking at the table, the gray is the original budget from 2 years ago, and that was close, $54 million. If you recall, last year we came back to the board, talked about supply chain impacts. We actually reduced the budget from 54 down to 39. Even with $39 million in the over the 2 years, base again, continued supply chain impacts, we're actually anticipating, at least right now, $14 million to be carried over. That's at $13.96 million, which will be anticipated as unspent, and staff would recommend that being carried over. For the new 2024 purchases, that's the $27.4 million, and then the second year at 24. So that 41 plus the 24 is at $66 million. Again, in the rate model, we're anticipating 65%, but here in the budget, we're showing it at 100%. All right. So jumping into the capital program, I got three slides on the capital program, and as the board might have seen at our last quarterly update, right now the five-year improvement plan for the next 5 years is estimated to be $686 million. Of that, $115 million would be external funding, reducing our net costs. Just looking in water, sewer, and recycled water, water is really driving. You can see that in the blue, almost $90 million per year. The two main projects in there is Paris North and PWR are two of the larger projects, almost $100 million in that period. Sewer 43, significant replacement happening in the sewer area, and then recycled water is pretty consistent, $3.5 million over the next per year over the next 5 years. So one of the things I highlight are the top 10 projects. Knowing that the overall two-year budget for capital is $300 million, the top 10 is $175, $176 million. So, you know, a significant portion is in the top 10 projects, which I list here. I mentioned Paris North is the top project at $57.7 million. Even with those top 10 being 175, we have 159 capital projects that are being funded over the next 2 years. So even though these are the large ones, there is a lot of projects occurring throughout the district to maintain and improve our infrastructure. And then this is the five-year capital plan, just broken out by both water, sewer, recycled water in general, but it also shows it by expansion, replacement, and system betterment. Again, $300 million in the first 2 years. That's the $150 and $150. $82 million for replacement projects. And I think that's one of the trends we're seeing is, you know, just a little more allocated to replacement and maintaining the current system. Expansion is still almost 50%. When you look at it over the 2 years, and that's, you know, when you go out further, just based on growth, that's continues to increase. Overall, betterment and replacement on average, as you can see, that 21% each for the next 5 years, and then you can see expansion at 58%. And just a note, I mean, significant investment, but we also have almost over four billion in assets that we need to maintain and improve. So certainly that investment is needed when you have $4 billion in capital assets. Just have one slide on rates. I did mention earlier, we did make, as we continue to refine the model and the cost of service, did have a slight reduction on sewer. So this is the newest number. I anticipate this number to change slightly. I can't promise it will be exactly 6.3 and 6.4, but it will be in that mid-sixes, 6.4, 6.5 overall. And this is on an 18 CCF. So the first year, 6.3%, and 6.4% in the second year. The cost of service and the final report will be coming to the board on the 19th. You'll see the final numbers and set the public hearing and approve the rates, or at least the proposed rates, or at least have a discussion on those at that meeting. But we've refined the numbers, slight reduction in the sewer. I think the overall reduction on sewer was about 1% on the rate, but because sewer is only about a third of the bill, it had about a 0.3% adjustment. I think what was presented to the board at the last cost of service was 6.7 on average. So again, 0.3% reduction roughly. And then next, just the schedule. I mentioned the April 19th meeting on the cost of service. That final report and recommendation will come to the board on the 19th. Based on that, we will get authorization to issue the Prop 218 notices. Those will go out on the 3rd of May, which is 49 days prior to the public hearing, legally required to be 45. And we'll have our third and final budget study session. I'll give you a lot more details on the budget at that point, including having the actual budget book so that you can see that 200 pages. But that is scheduled for May 17th, and then the public hearing in June. Start of the new budget is July 1st, and the rates will become effective January 1st. So with that, I'm open to any questions.
Well, I thank you, John. And I just wanted to add that obviously the two efforts, the cost of service and the budget process, are converging. And you'll see that at the next board meeting, where we will be making the recommendations so that we can issue the Prop 218 notices. I did want to highlight one thing John mentioned, which is, for the first time that I recall in the budgeting process, we are being very realistic in terms of execution on certain expenses. As mentioned on OFA, we have a budget, so we can put in the orders, for example, for vehicles, but we recognize the lead time for delivery of vehicles is a year and a half, sometimes longer. So because of those reasons, because of those chain of supply delays, we are being very realistic. 65% execution on OFA for the 2 years. Same thing with the CIP. Although we're showing the 100% budget, realistically, in building up the rates, we're only assuming 95% execution. Same thing on labor. We're not budgeting 100% of the positions. We've assumed a vacancy of 2.5%, which is significantly lower than the current vacancies that we're hoping to fill out the positions. So what I wanted to emphasize is we're being realistic in terms of the expenditures going forward. And, those types of assumptions were not, as far as I'm aware, included in previous budget cycles. But we're trying to make certain we're not overly conservative when it comes to reflecting the rates. We recognize this rate increase that we're putting forward is higher than any one of us would like to see. But we feel financially it is needed to maintain our highest level of service to our customers.
Director Armstrong.
Just to kind of follow up with that, I think we know at some point this inflationary pressure that we have in the supply chain and all of these things is going to catch up. And so to do everything that you've done to keep this close to 6.5%, I think is commendable. I do think, though, that as we move forward, even at the 218 approval part, to highlight the things that staff has done to bring that overall impact down would be very, very helpful. I know that you've mentioned some of them just now. I know that there's things on how we're managing our operations and reducing, chemical costs and reducing energy costs and all those things. I think where we can highlight those efforts will I think, really round out the story to support, the 6.5% increase or whatever it turns out to be.
We appreciate that feedback, Dr. Armstrong, and we will put that together in terms of the rationale for the staff recommendation. So we'll make sure that rationale is provided to all the board members.
Any other questions? I just had one, and that was on going way back, so don't bring the slide up, but on the medical, 5%, is that kind of the standard, or is that a guesstimate?
Well, it's been our standard.
Okay.
I believe, they call it a medical expense trending. Mm-hmm. And what we see in our actuarial for OPEB is in that 6 to 7%. So certainly actuarials, there's actually tables that they're using for the long term, and it is not uncommon to see that 6 to 7%. So I think from our perspective, we're being conservative. But, you know, as Joe mentioned on labor, this assumes 100%. So that number usually does come in significantly, I shouldn't say significantly less, but 3 to 4% less because of the vacancy. So I think 5% is reasonable.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I know that is a cost. They keep going up. Just want to make sure we're in the ballpark on that. And then I just want to echo Director Armstrong. Again, we're in an inflationary environment. I don't think our customers or our participants, they can expect these, but I want to make sure we're telling them why, what the story is. That, to me, is the most important part, that we're doing this based on running a good operation, and these are our expenses. I think people, I don't want to say don't mind rate increases, but I think they want to know this board is managing, this is a public agency, their money and their cost the best we can. So I think it's how we present this to the public that's very important to me if we're looking at this type of rate increase. So,
we agree.
So, all right. Very good. Thank you, John. With that, we will go on to our receive and file items. If I have a motion on Director Corona, Director Armstrong, would you like to second that?
Second.
Very good. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. That will bring us to our calendar review. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have 7 items to bring to your attention this morning. Previously mentioned by General Manager Mawad is this upcoming Monday, April 10th. Is the briefing and tour with Brigadier General Durham here at EMWD. On Thursday, April 20th, is the Western Riverside County reception with Chairman Adon Ortega in Menifee. Friday, April 28th, is the Southern California Water Coalition quarterly luncheon that'll take place in Temecula. Saturday, April 28th, is Menifee's Chamber of Commerce 44th Awards Gala. Thursday, May 11th, is the City of Paris State of the City Address. And Thursday, June 15th, has 2 events, one in the morning, which will be the Southwest Regional Economic Forecast, and in the evening will be the City of Marietta's State of the City Address. So all of those flyers are attached to the back of your calendar packet for you to review. Turning to page 2 is the current listing of the Board Master's calendar for the next 2 weeks. So if you please let me know if you have any updates or changes, I'll make sure that those are taken care of on your calendars. Then at the top of page 3 are the upcoming events with participants. We have May 2nd through the 4th is the Customer Service Week. And then May 9th through the 11th is Aqua Spring Conference. And then we have on the calendar June 29th is Western Riverside Council of Governments General Assembly. So continuing down is the board meetings and committee meetings. Please note we did cancel May 3rd's board meeting, and the May Administrative Committee meeting has moved to the 10th at 3:30. So all other meetings running through June are on schedule. And then at the top of page 4 is the interagency meetings. The April Elsinore joint meeting did move to May 15th at 1:30 in the afternoon. Otherwise, all other meetings through June are on schedule. And then EMWD's offices will be closed on Monday, May 29th in observance of Memorial Day. And that is all. Does anybody have any questions? That concludes my report. Thank you.
Very good. With that, we will go to Director's attendance report. We'll start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. First are the MWD meetings. Attended the Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District reception for Chairman Adon Ortega. General Manager Joe and I attended that. Thought it was a really nice event, and got to listen to him speak a little bit about his vision. And As was just reported, Eastern and Western will be hosting a joint reception for him on April 20th, so it'll be a great chance to introduce him to our stakeholders as well. And MWD meetings, the only thing to report there is I think that the chair is still trying to adjust his standing committee meeting times. His goal is to have them all start on time so that any public that's attending doesn't have to sit and wait for meetings to end and get delayed before they can participate in the meetings they want to hear. But at the same time, last March 27th was the first time that we actually had any concurrent meetings. And so there were two meetings that happened at the same time. And so I got to participate in one fully and then jump over to part of the other one. He is still soliciting input. He's still trying to adjust, but it sounds like there might be a few concurrent meetings that still take place. The Eastern meetings, Menifee projects update. That was a good update with Joe and Amanda on everything that's happening in Menifee, and that helped prepare me for two other meetings that were occurring after that. Riverside County Task Force meeting was good. They had a NOAA meteorologist. They had an update from Metropolitan, Riverside County Flood, and an update from Western, and they were all good. I think one of the things that the meteorologist said is that they still can't predict the weather past 14 days, as hard as they're trying. So, and the other thing that I learned too that I didn't know was that the Riverside County Task Force meetings are now quarterly meetings, and they'll all be quarterly. And at the end of the year, they're all virtual until the end of the year. That will be in person, and it will include a tour possibly. CalDESAL committee meeting. I think the new executive director there is just doing a great job. The financial performance of the association is improving. The membership is growing slightly, and they're just very engaged legislatively. So they're doing more there. Council member Ricky Estrada briefing. That was a good meeting with him. It was sort of a EMWD 101. It was a lot of information, and I thought it was a really good starting point. And, of course, he has a lot of interest in what's happening in Quail Valley and the septic to sewer conversion, but I think he'll be a really good advocate for that as well. Did the State Water Project Tour March 24th and 25th. So that was first time I got to participate in that tour. We partnered with the City of L.A. with Tracy Quinn. She was actually the one that asked if we wanted a partner. And then she got COVID the day before the tour, so she couldn't attend, but all of her guests still attended. Really, really good tour. We went to Orville, saw the dam, saw the spillway. It was running at like 15,000 CFS the morning that we were there, so it's quite a sight to see that. We went to the site's reservoir site, and, you know, with just all the weather that's been happening, that whole valley there is so green and so beautiful, and there's just cattle everywhere, and you're like going, wow, you know, just to think of that being underwater one day is sad to see, but, you know, certainly needed. But that was, I think, a really good addition to the tour, and I think really helped a lot of people understand what was happening with the site's reservoir. And then just overall, all of our guests really said they got a lot out of it. They didn't know much about water, where water came from, and they just really learned a lot about that and some of the challenges. I really want to compliment our communications, Kevin Parsons, did a fantastic job on that tour. It really helped make the whole tour very much more engaging and more fun for all of the participants. Good update with our general manager, and then March 27th, attended the Diamond Valley Lake media event. So first time in 3 years, we're adding water to Diamond Valley Lake, and so they had the valves open and the water flowing at 600 CFS. And just, you know, 2 days before that, I was seeing the 15,000 CFS, so that's a big difference. But
what a letdown.
You know, it still looked impressive, but... But that's good news, and they expect that they will have the lake full by the end of the calendar year. And but we had Wade Crowfoot was there too, the Secretary of Natural resources for the state, and you know, he did a good job speaking. And so overall, just a really good event. Those are my updates.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Director Corona.
Okay. The first one is the Special District Associates from Riverside County Meet the Candidate Zoom meeting. It was basically all the candidates introduced themselves and gave their spiels. Kind of last-minute thing they put together. It was kind of lowly attended, but still gave an opportunity to see all the candidates. Monthly up-to-date with the general manager, always a good meeting. And Rancho EMWD meeting yesterday, good meeting, kind of interesting on some of the things that were brought up by Rancho, but we'll see how those things play out in the future. And that's all I have.
Very good. Thank you for that. I attended the IE Works board meeting. Again, they're very appreciative of Eastern's participation as we try and bring younger people into the water and wastewater, especially the wastewater careers. Western-Eastern joint meeting, fairly standard items that we cover. Again, Eastern always does a good job of leading those meetings. Riverside County Water Task Force, I actually missed on that day, was not able to attend. I did go up to Sacramento for the Aqua Legislative Symposium. That was a very good conference. I also had the opportunity to have breakfast with the Aqua leadership, Pam Tobin, Kathy Green, gave them an update on all the things we're doing at Eastern, and so that was very good. Had a breakfast with our deputy general manager, discussed some of the administrative things and that she covers, and I always enjoy those, very helpful. And then WRCOG yesterday had a meeting. Director Denstedt and I asked the general manager to schedule an upcoming a water update for the entire group. I like to do that quarterly, keep them informed. I think as Jennifer mentioned, they have the general assembly coming up. And then the other thing is they are looking at some opportunities to get out of the expensive lease that they are in currently in downtown Riverside and try and cut some expenses there. So that's my report. Director Record.
Monthly update with GM, always good. The meeting yesterday with Rancho, they were very gracious in their congratulations to Director Corona for his big election win. You know, I'm not sure where I should bring this up, but I stay in contact with Kurt Schmoody, who's a rock star in the Delta. His career has been with DWR and now a consultant with Metropolitan, and he's been involved in so many projects. It's amazing. And the progress that has been made is remarkable. And I understood there was a little bit of a dust-up, but he just wanted me to make sure that I let you know that he really appreciated you getting his back, and that's great because he's amazing. So he's a real resource, and I really appreciate you doing that because it's well worth it.
Thanks.
Very good. Director Schlosson.
Thank you. I attended our joint meeting with Western, discussed legislative issues, the solve the water crisis in the North Groundwater Basin, among other things. The task force, just like Jeff said, they don't know. He talked about La Nina versus El Nino, and that some people are saying it was a pineapple express, other ones saying it's the atmospheric rivers, and he says, we don't know. We can't really explain it. So that was enlightening, if nothing else. Attended the Santa Ana SAPA meeting on the 21st. Had a legislative update. And they incorporated the Riverside and San Bernardino flood control stormwater resource plans into the OWOW plan, the update for the OWOW plan. And also Jason Oley gave a presentation for the task force meeting. Attended the chamber wake up, and EMWD was the sponsor. Alma Ramirez and Consuelo Arias were there. Alma did the presentation, did a really good job. I think she was very engaging. I think everyone really enjoyed it and learned a lot. SAPA meeting yesterday, we agreed to write a letter of support for AB 1547, 67, by Garcia. It's $500 million for integrated resource management and resiliency. And I also, on Saturday, the 1st, I attended the Springtastic Egg Festival at Marina Valley, Sunnymead Park. And we had Roxanne and Alan had a booth out there in the water. And they do a really good job. People come by, there are treats there, and they're asking for water. Engaging them in a discussion about tap water versus, you know, and I think that's really good for the district. A lot of people said, well, I don't know, I don't drink it. You bathe in it, right? Yeah. Do you buy Starbucks coffee? Yeah, that's tap water. You're drinking it. You are drinking it. You're just wasting money buying the bottles. So anyway, I thought that was very good. I like that whole program.
I agree. I think that water van was one of the best PR capital investments we've ever made here. So, and Alan, I give full credit to Alan on that one.
Yeah.
So, one of my highlights too. With that, thank you. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items? Director Armstrong.
Well, just I kind of forgot to mention, but it looked like Western Municipal Water District has rebranded themselves. Now they're Western Water, and so it's kind of interesting.
You're right. I think they have not changed their legal name, but the branding has changed, and that was recently unveiled. That's correct.
I just had one perhaps future agenda item, Joe. I don't know where we're at on this, but I'd like to report on, do we still have drought provisions in place here? Because I feel the community probably thinks we're not in a drought any longer. And so I just want to review if we have any outstanding drought provisions going on.
That's a great point, President Pauly. Thank you for bringing that up, because I have been having conversations with our staff, and we will be coming back to the board with recommendations to change our stage in our water contingency planning. As you know, currently we're in stage 3A mm-hmm. of our drought response plan. We will be recommending lowering that. We're having conversations. And as you recall previously, before this last drought, we were in stage 2. So we'll bring back our recommendation. Personally, I think we should go back to stage 1 versus stage 2, but we can have that conversation with the board. But to your point, it's a conversation that we need to have, and we'll have a recommendation and feedback from the board.
Okay. If we can get that on a future board agenda, that would be great. With that, legal counsel, I understand we have a need for closed session.
Excuse me. Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. Two items under Government Code Section 549.56.9. One item of existing litigation, Garin versus EMWD, and the other is one item of potential litigation.
Very good. We'll take a few minutes to switch over to closed session here. Okay. We're back in open session. I'm going to ask our legal counsel on the Garin matter if he would propose a board vote, what that needs to be, and then we'll look for a motion in a second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met on two items, Government Code Section 546.9, to discuss potential item. No action was taken on that item, but the board also met on existing litigation on the same section, and that's Garin versus EMWD. I'd recommend a motion from the board concerning this matter, which bears Riverside County Superior Court case number RIC 2001152, and I'd recommend that the board accept a settlement agreement that it contains the following essential terms. It'd be a payment of $500,000 to the plaintiff in exchange for a full waiver and release of any claims. The payment would be made within 10 days. The case would be dismissed with prejudice. There would be a release of all unknown claims. There would be no admission of liability by the district, and each party will be bearing its own attorney's fees and costs. And those are the essential terms of the settlement agreement, and we recommend approval.
Do I have a motion on that item?
Make a motion.
A motion by Director Armstrong. I have a second by Director Slauson. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. With that, passes 5-0. With that, we will stand adjourned until Wednesday, April 19th, 2023.